This week, Shinnecock Hills Golf Club on Long Island, New York, plays host to the 126th U.S. Open.
And now the stage is clear for Wyndham Clark. Yeah! Who takes down all the stars in Los Angeles to win the United States Open.
This is a U.S. Open week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
It's an amazing golf course because wide fairways. The greens are pretty small. They can tuck the pins away in different little nooks and crannies.
And Brandon Sprague.
You'll love me saying this, but you do have to think about angles and you have to think about approaching these greens.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
Just pick it up.
U.S. Open Week on The Fan is brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club. There's no better course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM, The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan and The Fan Sports Network. Bright and early on a Tuesday morning. Hope your commute's going well. Hello.
120 pumps.
Out of context, that doesn't sound great.
God bless the beaver.
That one I love.
We can all agree, Frenchie. We can all agree.
We played a lot of World Cup
I
fans.
I cannot speak English, but...
but! fans from all over the world here in America enjoying, I guess, the different things we offer in our culture all throughout. A loaded second hour of the radio program. Did this speech win a championship, and much like Kurt Russell in Miracle, who will be the actor to portray the speech that won the championship?
The championship speech.
Yes.
This is the reason.
We will get to that in the second hour, but let's start the second hour talking about our local team.
Hello.
They, you know, they come in and out of the news cycle for us.
They do.
And I feel this is a very interesting one because this broke during the back end of the show.
Yes.
And then some reporting came out yesterday from The Athletic on Tiago Splitter choosing to take the Bulls job. So there's a three-person story, and Jason Quick is one of the writers on this. And so can I add something real quick about journalism as a non-journalist?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no problem double or triple teaming stories.
Yeah, a contributor.
You guys want to Eiffel Tower this story? You do it. You high-five each other. I would like to know who did what blurbs. Is that a weird thing to request?
Yeah, what paragraph was yours? What pocket of the story was yours?
You know how small the TM is on a trademark?
Yeah.
I'd like that level font.
JQ.
Yeah.
Just to know who's doing what bits and pieces of the reporting here.
I also want, like if somebody writes it, but the other two are sharing information that they've learned, like we're the, you know, we can help source the story, but you're the one that's going to write it, but we'll put you on the tagline. I don't know how that works.
Like at the end of a song in a music video, it says written, and you're always like, did the artist do this themselves? And there's like seven names.
Yeah.
And you're like, who's Boogie?
Who?
I don't know who Boogie is.
Did Boogie write the whole thing?
Boogie just wrote the chorus?
Did Boogie write the hook? What's my favorite part?
But that's just a side reader note that I'd like to add. So they reported this. Splitter was one of the three finalists for Portland's coaching position, but he was never formally offered the job, according to a team source. But they Splitter was told he was welcome to return at a certain price point, which wasn't agreeable to Splitter and his agent. That prompted the Blazers to open a search. So I would guess by reading that, this is back when Splitter was the acting coach, and they
the
were
end
thinking
of the season,
about, do we make you permanent or not?
Yeah.
Based on that. Splitter leaving, Blazers team source said Portland's coaching finalists are down to Micah Norry and Tyler Lashbrook. Now, this is an interesting development. The Blazers and the Mavs are the only teams that are with a coaching vacancy. And Dallas is also sniffing around Micah Norry, who is the assistant at Minnesota. So there is a chance, according to this, the Blazers, if the Mavs hire the candidate the Blazers want, would have to reopen their search, according to a team source.
Okay, so we got to go back to square one?
Yes.
If Micah Norry is hired by Dallas.
I don't know who it is.
Wouldn't we just go to Lashbrook? Yeah.
I don't know.
If we had three finalists, one is gone. I'm not great at math. A second one could get hired.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we just go with the other guy?
According to the story, if one of them gets picked by the Mavs, they may have to reopen the coaching search.
Back to square one.
And
how about Chauncey Billups?
I think we nailed it. We don't nail it very often. Ooh. I think we absolutely threw the dart right in the middle of the bullseye.
Mm.
The reaction yesterday to this was exactly how I thought it would go, and I was not surprised in any way.
This is a disaster.
How this was framed. It's the worst thing to ever happen.
Yeah, we'll never
how
recover.
Dare you ever let this guy leave? Now, look, there are also fans celebrating Splitter leaving because they think he sucked and they didn't like him, and I'm not going to go there.
No.
What I would say, though, is this was an opportunity to pile on Dundon, to pile on the process, to pile on the cheap nature in which he has been reported on, and things being described as costly, as fumbles, as grave mistakes, as how dare you do business this way. It was the most predictable thing to predict, and it happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only thing that I'm critical of the process is how long it's taking. Like, that's the only thing that doesn't make sense to me, and I don't understand the idea that...
Well, the Stanley Cup was happening,
sure,
and he could not do two things at once.
That's where I think Tom Dundon is completely open for criticism here, because that's ludicrous. You run a hockey team and a basketball team at the same time, and you will run a hockey team and a basketball team at the same time.
You're not coaching the hockey team during the Stanley Cup.
No, there's also days off. There's that, like, yeah, you're flying around on a private jet, getting into the arena when the game starts, flying out on a private jet and home in your own bed a couple hours later that night. There is plenty of time to interview candidates and finalize this job process. That to me is totally open for criticism. The idea that this is some massive fumble that we'll never recover from, I just chuckle about, because there's this narrative out there that you can't win with a coach making below market money who is a end of the bench assistant. Like, this just isn't going to work. The immediate retort is, what was Tiago Splitter last year?
So, can I push back on this a little
sure,
bit?
Sure, go
not,
for it.
Now, you know that you and I are kind of lockstep on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's about saying you can't do it. I think it's about just saying you don't want to be looked at as the undermarket franchise. You don't want the reputation around the league to be, oh, the minute that gets pricey, that organization's going to dip because Dundon is cheap.
Sure.
And maybe I'm giving the other side of the argument too much credit on that, but I have kind of viewed it more that way. Not, it's not possible. It's more like saying, yeah, but you're in the business of hiring good people, correct?
Yes.
The last thing you want is the reputation that you don't reward people.
Yeah.
And I think that's more what the other side of the angle is, not that they actually can't get away with hiring a coach on the Chiefs.
And I look, I understand the optics of it. I push back on the idea that people won't want to work with your organization, or if you get to a point where you decide who the right coach is and you're wanting to pay them, that all of a sudden you will be blackballed from working with NBA agents for coaches or for players.
There's only 30 of these
jobs. You're going to be able to offer the same amount of financial salaries to your players. That's not going to impact anything. There's organizations who have had horrible reputations for long times that changed drastically and overnight. Look at the New York Knicks. What 5 years ago, if I would ask you, what's your opinion of James Dolan as an owner and how the New York Knicks are run, what would your answer be?
I still don't think he's a good owner.
No, they're a laughing stock.
The right people.
Right? He eventually found the right people, and the GM who made the right trades, pressed the right buttons. Look at that. You found a way to win.
Made the right coaching decision.
Their reputation was horrendous. Did they have any trouble getting a head coach? Did they have any trouble acquiring players? Like, no. Like, this idea that you're going to be blackballed and nobody's going to work with you if you're willing to pay a player.
But he's not known as cheap, Dolan. He's cheap in different ways, but as a franchise owner, he's not known as like necessarily the cheap guy. That's a little different than being a bad owner, right?
And I will again reiterate, as long as you're not cheap with the players, which matter for 90% of winning in the NBA, none of this bothers me. Yeah. It just genuinely does not.
What if they have to reopen the search? Let me ask you that, because if I'm Mike Inouye,
look, that part of it's a disaster. I think the process of it has been a disaster.
And have some of that than want to be in Portland with, like, what are we doing? Are we doing Denny? Are you making a trade? What are you doing here?
Yeah, look, I was all for taking your time. I did not buy into this notion that an acting head, you can't interview other people when you have an acting head coach. Your current head coach is still going to court dates for his being arrested by the FBI.
Right.
You still haven't even fired him. Tiago Splitter is an acting head coach. He did a fine job last year, but it's not like we needed to bend over backwards and just guarantee him everything. I had no problem with that idea. We need to interview enough people. We need to make sure we cast a wide net. All of that was cool with me. The criticism, again, that I'm fine with, it's ridiculous that it has taken this long. What are we doing here? Do you wanted to wait till the NBA finals were over? Well, now the NBA finals are over. Is it the Stanley Cup final being over? Well, now those are over.
Yeah.
Like, let's get an announcement. The NBA draft is next Tuesday. I'd like to have a coach in place. Mm-hmm. That to me is totally fair. But this notion of Tiago leaving being a fumble just cracks me up. Like, if I present a scenario to you where there's not a massive move made this offseason and the roster is large, it's Damian Lillard coming back from an injury and you sign somebody with the mid-level exception, whoever that player might be, who's a 12-point-per-game, 5-rebound, 4-assist
guy. Might be Rob
Will.
We don't know.
Might be Robert Williams. Maybe that's the guy you get. But Tiago Splitter's back as head coach. How do we view the offseason? Is that a great offseason because we kept Tiago Splitter? And vice versa. If you end up hiring Tyler Lashbrook as your head coach and you make a move and you acquire Jaylen Brown, how is the offseason viewed?
Yeah.
It's a home run. It's right. This is the biggest move we've ever made.
With Brown, by the way.
Which is fine. Yeah. This idea that you can't go get into, you know, back end of the assistant or back end of the bench assistant and have it work out, or that they might not be ready to win. We also don't know how good of a coach Tiago Splitter is. And he might be a great coach. He might be a great developer of talent. I understand that overseas he had some nice accolades and he won a lot of games. I get it. But I don't know. I feel like sometimes I'm living in a bizarre world from other people. Portland at the All-Star break was 27-29. They were two games below 500. They won their last game before the All-Star break, beating Utah to get to 27-29. Okay, All-Star break time. They went 15-11 in the second half of the year to climb their way into a playoff spot. And I brought this up before. Those 15 wins, Phoenix without Devin Booker, Chicago, stop me when you hear a playoff team, Memphis, Indiana, Utah, Brooklyn, Indiana, Minnesota without Anthony Edwards, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Washington. Hey, the Clippers, there's a play-in or playoff team. New Orleans, the Clippers again, and the Kings.
Yeah.
You beat two teams who were trying to beat you with their roster, and you went 15-11.
Yep.
The rest of the wins were against teams
absolute
who were
garbage.
Actively trying to lose. Yeah. And so this idea is if we can't rebuild because he went 15-11 and those were the 15 wins, it's ludicrous.
I think, you know, it's... I find it very it's a fascinating conversation because when people say coaching doesn't matter, it's roster based, it feels like that same narrative is now being flipped because we love to pile on the Dundon stuff.
Yep.
Now I will say this. They will probably be asked at the press conference whoever they end up hiring, because I don't know how anybody in this market that goes to that press conference doesn't ask the question. If there's any validity to not hiring somebody during the Stanley Cup,
right?
Because the owner's busy, and they could very well just deny that. I'm like, yeah, that reporting's not accurate at all.
Maybe they do.
Fine. What lie or no lie? It needs to be asked, right? But if it's true,
it's outrageous.
That is absolutely one of the dumber things I have heard, and that is a real criticism that should be shouted at Tom Dundon.
Yes.
What do you mean? You had off days. You're an owner. You're not at practices. You don't need to be there. You don't give speeches. You're not X and O-ing. Like, what do you mean you can't make a hire during the Stanley Cup? Now, maybe Swag's point is can't make an announcement during the finals.
Fine, they wanted to wait till the finals were over.
Very well could be the deal. I just will find it interesting if they have to reopen the search. That's criticism. It's time to start saying, the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
if you have three finalists, and to your point, two get taken.
You still should have one left. Were those not finalists?
There was a third guy there that you like. And look at sports teams and college teams. They tend to actually end up working out pretty well when they don't get their number one guy, right?
Yeah, like, quite often what choice was Dana Altman down
in
Oregon?
Seventh.
Terry Stotts, who's one of our most successful coaches ever. We viewed him as a layover coach of who's this guy? We're getting the guy who got fired in Milwaukee.
He's if they go Lashbrook because Norrie takes Dallas, absolutely bet a decent payment on the bet of the Kalshi market. What media members are going to come out and say Blazers took the cheap option and settled for the fourth guy on the bench?
Yeah.
That is absolutely going to be written and said. But I'm going to tell you right now, if they hire Tyler Lashbrook, I'm going to say, hey, man, he worked under Mazzulla. He knows what a good system is. What are we doing on the roster to help him out here?
Right.
That's going to be my opinion. But I'll tell you, there is a certain faction of media, and you know who they are. They're going to write how he's the fourth guy on the bench. He's the cheap option. The Blazers went cheap. Cheap, 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 cheap. And that's what it's going to be. And I very well would say, yeah, okay, maybe that's part of the deal, but also the roster matters a lot. If you have to reopen the search, yeah, dude, that's an absolute problem. There is no arguing that point.
No, and I still am just, I don't know. I guess part of it is confusing to me because things get reported and... sometimes we take, when it comes from certain people, we take it kind of as gospel, and we never really know. Like, I'll go back to the Chris Haynes Van Gundy report that we talked about.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's kind of a funny name to throw into the mix. That'd be entertaining if Van Gundy is the head coach. And it was labeling him a finalist for the job, but he had not yet interviewed for the job, or they were requesting permission to interview him.
Well, and then they announced three finalists.
But they never announced
four.
They never announced anything. It was reported that there were three finalists.
I know, but report, there was some reporting saying he was a finalist.
Yes.
But then another report that there were three finalists, and he wasn't one of them. It was Norrie, Splitter, and Lashbrook.
That's the other hard part in this entire process, is that we're all left because it's taken too long. That's the big, again, criticism, is why is this taken so long? But we're all left reading tea leaves, and then you see a Mark Stein report that says this, and you're like, well, that's got to be the case. And in reality, we never quite know exactly what's going on behind the scenes and where they're at in this entire thing.
It's because it's the most gossipy sports league
to
ever exist.
It just never stops, dude. And it's
and I love when people hear stuff and then they tell you as if it is matter of fact, concrete, like so-and-so doesn't want to be here.
Right.
Okay. Guess who shows up? So-and-so.
Yeah, right.
It's just, it's a league full of divas and gossips, and it's like advanced high school. And the minute anybody gets a secret, they want to lean in and be like, guess what so-and-so said?
Right.
It's like, all right, cool, but you actually don't know.
No, we have no idea.
I was told that a trade happened, and it happened within 20 minutes. And I'm not super Mr. Plugged In NBA guy. I'm going to tell you with every fiber of my being, there's not a chance. There is not a chance a deal gets done in didn't just call
for any sort of sizable detail. There's no chance.
That was being worked multiple phone calls through. It wasn't on a whim.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I'm going to, hey, you interested in this trade? Yeah, me too. All right, send it in. Okay, bye. I love you. Like, that's not how a league operates.
You think they drop an I love you after they talk to another GM? It'd be kind of funny.
I think they do, actually. I think they really support each other.
Hugs and kisses, Danny Ainge. We'll talk to you later. Okay, buddy. See you later. Night night. Get a good night's sleep.
It's a really hard thing to balance, like being trying to be informed, level-headed, and then
criticize what needs to be
criticized. Getting on the internet and going, well, okay, I'm either out to lunch or these people are out to lunch, and I don't know how to feel about any of it. But I also love, like, if you're describing it a certain way, a mistake, a dropping of the ball, a fumble, whatever. What are you going to say if the next guy comes in? And they're just as good as last year. Like, do you self-edit that and say I was wrong?
Right.
Or do you just kind of move on? I don't know how to process it. And it's okay to be wrong. We are wrong all the time in this industry.
Yes, happens quite often.
But I can't go as far as to be like, massive mistake to lose Splitter. I guess.
We have no clue how the next guy is going to be. We have no clue how good of a head coach Thiago Splitter actually is. And again, it's unfortunate for me because it turns into it sounds like I'm dumping on Thiago Splitter. I'm not trying to dump on Thiago Splitter.
No, I would have been happy if they hired Splitter.
I'm just arguing, yes, what he did to hold the locker room together was commendable. Mm-hmm. Going through the injuries was an incredibly difficult thing to do. We also had a historic year of tanking in the NBA to the likes that we've never seen before.
Yep.
And we had literally the easiest schedule in the NBA in the second half of the year, and we capitalized on that by going 15-11 and winning all the games that we were supposed to get into the postseason. So I just, all of these things can be true simultaneously. Part of it for me, I think, is frustrating where, again, I have no problem criticizing Dundon where I think it's fair to criticize him, and I will criticize the process, the length of time that it has taken, the delays, and the Stanley Cup final stuff, if that is true. All of that is ludicrous, and I don't have a problem with anybody criticizing that. I think to kind of stick with a theme, though, that I have felt through this entire time with Dundon, my biggest frustration is somebody who has been hypercritical of aspects of this organization for a very long time, not making aggressive moves, the Neil Olshea stuff, the firing of Stotts, the bungling of the Damian Lillard thing, the Scoot and Shaden back-to-back drafts, not wanting to part ways. Like, there's been a lot to criticize here, and there's been times I felt like I've been standing on an island being like, is anybody else paying attention to this? And those people have not been criticizing it. A year ago, we extended a head coach who had a 35% winning percentage, who was hired in a process in which we didn't actually interview any candidates to be a head coach.
We interviewed Becky Hammon.
He was here for four years.
6-2 denier.
4 years in a game. He won 35% of his games.
Well, they got hot at the end.
And we gave him a contract extension.
We did, yeah, we did.
And again, I don't know if Chauncey, like, he was in a tanking process. I don't know if he's a good coach or bad coach.
Right.
But there wasn't a lot in there that made me said, yeah, this guy's the right guy. And where were all the people criticizing that last, we're giving him an extension for what?
Right.
It didn't exist. And now all of a sudden the sky is falling because his third assistant who went 42-40 mm-hmm. or 42-39, whatever it would have been, sometimes you lose me with that narrative.
Another thing in the news is we had a politician on the radio station yesterday. How about that? We had Candace Avalos, who is one of the city council members. She was on primetime, and she gave some thoughts on her viewpoints of city council and the funding that Tom Dunn and the Blazers are searching for the renovations to the Moda Center. We'll dive into that coming up next. Hour 2 rolls on. 105.1 The Fan.
I cannot speak English, but...
But we're back. Dirt and Sprague here, 105.1 The Fan. Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Squeeze them damn things! Make sure you got two!
It's a beautiful little Tuesday morning out there, and it is a...
Millsack!
Brought to you by Sparta TRT. We'll get to that in the final hour. Millsack questions could be thrown in at 503-864-6326.
I wanted to be the superior Frenchman snob, but then I ate the beaver nuggets.
That's a long-ass drop, but it's a
good
one.
We might need to just get, like, beaver nuggets, too. Beaver nuggets would be a pretty good one. A couple of thoughts, by the way, quickly, because a lot came in that segment.
Sure.
Somebody said, oh, God, where did it go? I didn't think it was a massive mistake to lose him, Splitter, that is. Mm-hmm. But I would say the way it has all gone down has been disappointing to watch, to feel like we didn't choose a different direction. We just lost out on him because we've been seemingly slow on everything. And
that's fair.
That's totally fair. I have no issue with that. I don't know if
I'm okay if you like him and you're bummed we didn't get him. I'm not even mad at that. I'm just trying to be as honest about this as I can of, like, we just don't know how good or bad the coach of the team is going to be next year. Because as people like to highlight in other regimes, it's more about the roster.
Yes, and it also... We also don't know what conversations are like behind the scenes and how that looks, right? It might have been Splitter got an offer from Chicago, wanted to return to Portland because of his time here and the year he spent here, and called and said, hey, have you made a decision yet? We're probably going to go in a different direction. Okay, then we just don't know exactly how that looks behind the scenes. That's the other difficult part.
Right.
Another one, Portland doesn't have generational talent, so it's important they hire an elite coach. A retread vet should be the route. Look at the Knicks coaching staff. And this is the point that I just don't understand. Like, who is an elite coach in the NBA? Give me an elite coach to you.
I think Spo is an elite coach.
Eric Spoelstra is an elite coach.
He's probably my favorite coach in the league.
I don't disagree with the point that he's an elite coach. How did Miami do this year?
Not very good.
Okay. Is Steve Kerr an elite coach?
I would tend to think Steve Kerr is a good coach, yes.
Okay. How did Steve Kerr do this year?
They did not make the playoffs again.
Got it. You win with generational talent. An elite coach is not going to lift your roster up. Steve Kerr is an elite coach,
and I think
looks
they
like
would
one.
Both say that, Spo and Steve Kerr.
Yes,
we need the right guys. You got the Jimmys and the Joes.
If I just have Bam and that's all I got, we're going to go 42-43-39 in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
And we're not going to win a playoff series, or we're going to lose in the play-in. If I'm Golden State and I don't have Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Kevin Durant, I'm going to go 37-45 and not win a play-in game. This idea that an elite coach will lift this roster above its pay grade just doesn't exist in the NBA. Talent ultimately wins at the end of the day until you get to the postseason, and then you hope your coach is ready for it. We all crowned Mitch Johnson a genius coach when he won Game 7 of the Conference Finals against a banged-up Thunder team, and then the narrative a week later was, or 2 weeks
he got
later,
out-coached.
Like, what? You're not making any adjustments. What are you doing in the fourth quarter? And now he's an idiot. So the opinions can sway back and forth. What matters the most at the end of the day is adding to your roster and getting better.
There's no doubt about that. Speaking of Mike Brown, coming up in the next segment, we're going to get to the speech that won the Knicks the championship after a 53-year drought. And I'm going to ask you this.
Was it about letting the dogs out? Because he did it again last night on Fallon.
He did let the dogs out on Fallon last night. Anytime that guy can do it, he gets super excited. He will take advantage of the opportunity.
I love me some Mike Brown. Good for him, man.
I am, too. He's been in the NBA forever. I think he's a good coach. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to fire Tibbs. But they brought in, obviously, they made the right switch.
Yeah.
Because he was what they needed.
Worked out.
I will ask you this question to noodle on. And you can text in at 503-864-6326. What would you abstain from sex for 10 weeks for? In your life right now.
How extreme can I get? Like, how big can I shoot?
I mean, being a trillionaire. That's not real.
Okay.
Give me something that you legitimately want to do.
Oh.
I will give you two things that right now, if you told me you get this, but you have to obtain from sex for 10 weeks from your wife, I want these two things that badly. I will tell you what that is.
Any solo acts allowed in the 10 weeks?
Whatever you want, man.
Oh.
Oh, no.
No.
Abstaining.
No drainage whatsoever.
No.
Got it. Hmm. Okay.
Think about that.
Noodle.
Okay? We'll get to that. Let's
time to drop trial and hog out.
I mean,
I'm out.
At the end of the 10, one weekend. Let's get to this. Candace Avalos was on primetime yesterday, city council member.
One of 12.
One of 12. And they did an interview. It's delightful. You can find it at 1051thefan.com.
I think if you go to 1081thefan.com, it directs you to 1051thefan.com.
I'm pretty sure it still works.
I'm pretty sure it still
works.
Don't
laugh at me over there.
All right.
You little Italian bitch.
You old balls over there. Come on,
let's get to this. Avalos on the city council reversing their position.
I think during the state process, all 12 councilors showed support for the state putting dollars for it, because regardless of where we stood, we were always going to need other funding that wasn't all going to be able to come from the city. And so I think along that process, we were essentially told, you know, we just need to secure this. It's the state also has a limited window that they legislate within, whereas we're legislating all year, and it was a short session, so they only had like a month and a half, right? And so I think from there, it was always going to be that the next step would be that the counselors ultimately, because the city owns the MOTA, we're going to have to negotiate the actual terms. And that's where the diversity in thought is coming in. And that's where, you know, Portlanders are weighing in on what they think would make it a good deal for the city to invest in. So I wouldn't say, I think definitely at the beginning we showed our unity, and I don't think that that was fake. I just think that now that we're getting into the weeds, these are where there are some disagreements that are coming up.
And those disagreements are about, you know, lease deal. And
unionizing the workforce.
Unionizing, that was a big, she mentioned that. She's like, what's her red line? That was something she had noted, is like most stadium arenas have union.
Yeah.
We don't, very unique. She's like, that's a big deal for her, for the workers' rights and all that stuff. So that was part of it. The other part is a deal with the Blazers being in jeopardy, because I don't know if you've heard. They're gone. They're as good as gone. The Seattle Blazers, the Kalamazoo Kazoos, they might be out this beast. Here's Candace Avalos on a deal with the Blazers and whether it's in jeopardy.
Well, I think regardless, there has to be some kind of deal, right? Because we are in a bridge agreement. We have to negotiate a new lease, regardless of how we feel about how that gets done or what the community benefits are. So I think that will get done. And so our goal here is that whatever that new lease is going to have, again, those community benefits, but also will encourage the Blazers to want to stay and build here, especially with their new owners here in Portland. So I don't think that there's necessarily a threat that there will be no deal, because I think at the end of the day, we have to negotiate a new lease as the owner of the building. But I think the nitty gritty is just like what's in that deal. And, you know, we're also just at the beginning. I think people forget that we have a long way still before the end of the year. I mean, I know we're halfway through the year, but there is still a lot of time for the community to shape this. We just spent all weekend out in a bunch of parks in the city hearing from community, and that was really fruitful to see, you know, again, what many people express their desire for the Blazers to stay here. People just want us to be really making sure that we're being good stewards of tax dollars at a time where there are so many Portlanders that are struggling. So these are the kinds of decisions that I have to make as somebody that approves moving any kind of tax dollars. It's not even just this, it's just in general. That's our main job, is making sure that Portlanders get the value of their tax dollar. And that's what we're trying to negotiate right now.
I know politicians are not in a good light for most people. And I certainly, certainly understand the thought of most people on how the city is being run. I did find myself being a little sympathetic to her on that part of, like, I think the last thing somebody like her wants is to be highlighted for the fumbling of tax dollars and the way it's being spent, or they spent too much, or they spent this amount and they didn't get what they thought they were going to get for the amount they spent. That is part of all of this. Now, again, the urgency is there for people and wanting to get a deal done, but what was your main takeaway? It's a good interview.
Yeah.
It's really good that we had at least somebody willing to come on. We've been trying to get somebody on, and it says they want to come on, and then now they're on vacation, but we're not really sure. Are they still on vacation? I don't know if we'll get somebody on. But it was nice to at least have somebody on city council willing to talk publicly about where the position of the city council is with the $120 million funding.
Well, and I heard that was interesting. In the start of the show, they talked about how they cast a wide net and texted like six different people involved in the process, and she was the only one that even got back to him. So credit to her for, one, getting back to him, and two, being willing to come on the show and explain her side of it. I left with the same reassured feeling that I've always had, and my opinion hasn't changed a lot. I understand that there can be tricky spots in negotiations. I understand that things can get a little uncomfortable, especially when you're dealing with the Portland City Council. But at the end of the day, we own the arena. Our own city says we have to spend nearly $500 million to renovate it just to keep it up to up to date over the next 20 years. And this is ultimately going to get done. They're going to haggle over the details, as expected. They're going to try and get the best possible deal. And for all we know, Tom Dundon might drive a hard bargain on certain things that the city council is going to want. And they might have to make a tough choice at the end of it. But I think that the takeaway that I had that was really nice that furthered my reassured feeling was the idea that they understand what's on the line here. And Suk, I think, asked that question about, like, do you guys get what this would mean if they leave? Do these other city council members understand what's at stake if you don't get a deal done? Mm-hmm. And it was like, yes, we are well aware. Now, she at times talked out of both sides of her mouth and saying they're not going to leave. That's not going to happen. And then 10 minutes later, like, yeah, there's a threat that they leave if we don't get a deal done. So it was kind of a little bit of both sides. But I also understand the tricky spot that you're in as a Portland City Council person, because we went over this with the results with the survey. So we had our listeners and sent it out. We did the survey on the air. We read through some of the responses. And what were the number one and number two answer on almost every question? Do it. I don't care how much it costs. For the love of God, at every expense, keep the Blazers. To this billionaire jackass is not going to get a penny of my tax dollars, and I refuse to support anything that goes into it. And so the majority of people probably end up somewhere in the middle. Who knows? But the people who are responding to the survey, answer one was do it. Answer two was don't do it. And so if you're a city council person, you're going to go out on a community event. Who are you going to hear from? Five people will come up and tell you you're just handing out something to a billionaire, and five people telling you, we can't risk losing the Blazers.
The problem with look, it's not a problem with the argument. I understand, like, you don't want to be, just willy-nilly with the money here. But the problem with the other side of the argument that we're on, not that we're on the side, but the opposite side that we have on it, is just like, you own the building. And she admitted, like, yeah, we're going to have to renovate anyway.
No matter what happens with the Blazers.
Like, even if you think it's just a handout to a billionaire, which you can certainly make that point, there's no doubt, you're going to have to spend the money on it anyway.
No matter what happens with the Blazers.
So what do you do then? If the Blazers are gone, right, and they're like, hey, we've announced a $100 million renovation project, we're like,
what?
Are those same people going to be irate? And like, the building's fine. Like, you just want it to be the old Memorial Coliseum and just crumble and hosting only high school events with an occasional WNBA team? I don't know what they want there. And I understand you want to be smart with your money. But my main takeaway, biggest takeaway, even as somebody who was kind of sitting on the fence and not willing to say where her vote would be or what the other council members would be, my main takeaway was largely the tone of it is, it's going to get done.
We're going to get a deal done.
That was my main takeaway. I don't know if you had the same takeaway, if other people had the takeaway. That was my biggest takeaway, is that like, ultimately, this just matters too much. And, oh, by the way, we own the building. We need to renovate it.
We understand.
It's going to get done.
My hope is it turns out the same way as Raleigh did. And if you want to negotiate that in, I'm all for it. We'll give you the funding for the arena. You know what you're going to do? Build up the area around it.
And I think he wants to. And I if could he be wrong.
Right? That's exactly how it worked out in Raleigh. I think they got some tax dollars for the stadiums. I can't remember how much of it came from his pocket. Yeah. And now he's spending to build up around the arena. Let's have that be a part of the agreement that we come to.
So good stuff from Candace Avalos on primetime yesterday on the position that they're holding within city council so far. It's only one person representing the voice, but basically the takeaway seems pretty positive, in my opinion. You can check that out at 1051thefan.com. Or if you type in 1080 the fan, you get redirected in your face, old balls. Speaking of old balls, the speech that won the championship that broke the streak, let me ask you, would you abstain from sex for 10 weeks from your significant other for something? And what would that something be? Fan text line 503-864-6326. I'll tell you why I'm asking that on the other side on The Fan. It's a Mail Sack Tuesday, so get those Sparta TRT Mail Sack questions.
Mail Sack.
At 503-864-6326. We'll get to that in the final hour. Coming up in the third hour, we have not talked about Brendan Sorsby disappearing from Texas Tech.
What?
Bro, yep. I really don't care.
Well, don't be a chonch. You know?
I'm just glad this story's going to die.
Me too.
It's gone. It's over. No more lawsuits.
You text me that it happened. I was not on the internet when you texted me that. I'm like, well, looking, at least the Sorsby thing is dead. I'm like, oh, thank God.
You texted me and I was out flopping around in a kiddie pool with the sun. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I haven't really show prepped yet either. Let's start diving in. Thank God there's a Brendan Sorsby update at least.
I asked the question before the break, and I'm very curious to get your answers. I have two things here.
By the way, the most commonly used joke right now at the fan text line is, isn't that just called marriage?
Somebody said,
where did this one go?
Let me re-ask the question for anybody just tuning in. Good morning. Happy Tuesday.
Right.
What would you, right now, that's realistic.
What would you
abstain
up?
For 10 weeks of sex from your partner in order to get? I'll give you my two right now before you read thoughts. The first, break 80.
Breaking 80.
If I could break 80, and you could say a 79 with the luckiest 80-foot birdie putt of my life.
Holing out a chip on 18.
Does not matter, however you do it.
I don't care, dude. Yeah. The scorecard will not say.
79.
79. And because it's been a New Year's resolution goal for 3 years now, let me catch like a 45-pound salmon out of the ocean.
Ooh, you want a big salmon?
I want, you know, the river, preferably the ocean, but let me just hook a big-ass salmon.
Yeah. Did we ban fishing? Can't you not fish in Oregon anymore? Did we ban that?
No, we can still fish.
I thought we banned that.
No, there's some stupid group that's not going to pass. But let me catch.
We did ban foie gras, though.
Foie gras?
Yeah, that was an important issue. Let me catch.
We settle those in Oregon.
40 to 45 pounds. And maybe that's not a big one to people. Whatever.
Yeah, what is considered a big salmon? Like, if you caught one that's like, dude, that's a big salmon.
I don't know.
How much is a 60-pounder?
A 45-pound fish is a healthy fish.
That seems like a big salmon, is it not?
I don't have a reference point here of how big they get, but let me catch the 40 to 60-pound salmon that takes 40 minutes to hook in.
Oh, you want a 40-minute reel job, huh?
Dude,
that's a lot of reeling.
That's a battle, though.
That is.
So, yeah, those are the two things I'd go 10 weeks without sex for.
Mine would probably both be golf-related. Yeah, it says a large salmon, Chinook.
I think in the ocean, they get to like 60.
They can weigh anywhere from 40 to 126 pounds.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, dude, if you've got a 120-pound salmon.
That's a healthy
salmon. Talk about a healthy salmon.
My family's eating good in the neighborhood.
That's the dirt salmon out there, man. That thing's
steaks.
Sitting on the couch playing video games.
For a month.
I would go.
They're both golf.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't really have anything
else. Well, hole in one, because you haven't had one.
Just so you shut up about it. Shut up about the sun. I would love, like a legitimate hole in one as an adult that I could actually.
Shut up about the sun.
Well, like, I want to party with my hole in one. And I didn't get to party with my last hole in one because I was a child.
You want one.
I want a party. I want my Jesus to party, and I want a party too.
A hole in one is not a hole in one.
So that, and then I have broken par before on a golf course.
I was there.
I'd love to break 70. I had a chance to do it, and I crumbled on 18 with a bogey.
I disagree. Oh, you bogeyed 18?
I bogeyed 18 to shoot a 71. If I would have, I've birdied 18 at Stone Creek probably more than any hole in my lifetime. It's a very easy hole for me. It's a par 5. You can get there in two. It's manageable.
Straight,
and I bogeyed it. If I would have birdied it, I would have shot a 69.
Oh, my God. I had no
but
idea.
It didn't dawn on me until 18, standing over my 3-wood second shot in the middle of the fairway in a reachable. I'm like, oh, my God, if I hit this on the green, I'm shooting a 69, and I filleed one out to the right. I did end up in a bunker, and I had to get out of the bunker, and then I missed my par putt and tapped in for a 71.
That's a good up and down.
I mean, I'll take it. But, yeah, it would be breaking 70 on the golf course would be having a 6 on a scorecard. Sign me up.
Swag, do you have
it would be breaking 80.
Breaking 80 for
you as
well?
You've never broken 80?
No, I've been close. I've had a couple 82s.
Yeah.
How much better do you think he is than me?
He's just been playing longer than you.
Oh.
He has a lot more rounds under. He's old balls.
Yeah, you're right.
How long have you been seriously playing golf for? Like, you probably picked it up later in life, right, I'm assuming?
I did. Probably. Well, I got real serious when we started the golf show. I got hooked up with Harold.
Right.
10, 12, 15 years, maybe.
Old blue balls himself. All right. You can chime in at 503-864-6326. That's the fan text line.
The other thing, if you could get legs in the pilot men to the final four.
I said realistic. How about the tournament?
Somebody said, I'm on week 12. What do I get? What do I got? I'm waiting for my prize. What do you
call a doctor?
What do I
call a doctor?
My wife's got that challenge in the bag. 10 weeks is the minor leagues, baby.
Minor leagues.
No sex for 10 weeks. It happens anyways. Now I'm getting something for it. That'd be awesome.
Well, let me get to this because we need to get to the third hour. Jim Dolan's getting a lot of credit now. The speech that was posted by Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson. This was with 5 games remaining in the regular season.
Okay.
Jim Dolan decides to have the team sit down.
It's a James Dolan speech.
James Dolan sitting down.
Got it.
He gives a speech. Now, it's about 3 minutes and 50 seconds. I cut it to 212. I want you to, if you want to know what a billionaire owner's speech to motivate his team is, take a listen, Jim Dolan.
Sacrifice everything around you to, for these next 10 weeks to win that championship. I believe you can do it. I've seen you do it this season. And you've seen yourselves do it. You know you can do it. I believe you know you can do it. But will you do it? You need sacrifice, and you need to eliminate all the distractions around you. I'm going to tell you now, stop talking to the press. Instead, talk to each other. Give your concerns, your gripes, etc. Do it with each other. Make a commitment to them. I got some other suggestions for you. You need to up your practice. You need to pay more attention to your diet. You need to sleep better. You need to be ready for every game. And just let me start on that point. That is not something you start on the first game of the playoffs. That is something you start right now, today. You have to practice this right for this game and the next 4 games so that you've got a rhythm to yourselves when you get into the playoffs. I suggest that you go home and you talk to your families, you talk to your girlfriends, your wives, etc., and you tell them about the next 10 weeks, about how you're going to be different the next 10 weeks, and how your families are going to sacrifice for the next 10 weeks. I had this idea that maybe you should give up sex for the next 10 weeks. You don't have to give up sex for the next 10 weeks. But, like Spartans, you know what Spartans are? Right? They denied themselves, right, so that they could have an edge. Get the edge. Go home, talk to your wives, tell them. Don't tell me you're not going to have sex. Don't tell them it was my idea. But let them know what this is going to be like, what your commitment is going to be like.
Be like the Spartans. Don't have sex. Go win a title. Damn it.
This is Sparta.
I would want to say, Jim, when's the last time you ran a mile? We're out here about sacrifice and like, dude, we're out here busting our ass.
I need you to practice. Up your practice.
Yeah, get the edge, win the title. Maybe they went sexless. I don't know.
That could have been the case. That's why.
Wimby's out here just whoring around the streets, and Brunson's like,
having menage a trois.
I'm that dog. I got blue balls like you wouldn't know.
God bless the beaver.
Yeah, the French.
Whatever it takes, baby. Whatever it takes. That's where was that for Thiago in Dundon? If we would have had that against the Spurs, if they wouldn't have been humping, maybe we would have won.
What would it be if we found out Tommy Two Nickels gave a speech and said, stop having sex and take this playoff?
That seems like a very Rod Brind'Amour thing, by the way. He's got that edge and that psycho to him. I would not be surprised if he asked his team to do that.
We need to get to the third hour. Yeah. I saw a video yesterday with Brind'Amour in the locker room. Absolutely shredded.
Oh, dude, he's Rod the Bot is his nickname. He's insane.
Well, I didn't know how jacked he was.
He does every workout with the team. He's one of those guys. They love playing for him.
I love that guy.
By the way, didn't the Spartans sleep together?
What?
Didn't they? Isn't that like a...
Spartans around?
I think they were, you know,
the 300 guys?
Way back in the day, yeah. I think so.
Really?
Maybe. Don't quote me on that.
Real charged up with each other, huh?
Search that during the break. I'm pretty sure that happened.
Okay.
Vaguely confident.
I thought that was... All right, I'll have to look that up. I didn't know. I don't think Nolan knew either.
Would have been pretty funny if somebody responded with that. So you want us to, like, sleep with each other?
The Knicks won the title because they didn't have sex for 10 weeks. Loaded third hour of the program. Brendan Sorsby out at Texas Tech. We'll kick it off, Hour 3 on The Fan.